You're listening to All Things Considered on 89.1 WEMU. Good afternoon, I'm Bob Eccles. Wednesday marks the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights March on Washington, and joining me to talk about the march and more is EMU Professor Ronald Woods, who is the first head of Eastern's Department of African American Studies. Dr. Woods, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Bob.
You mentioned that at the time of the march you were about 15 years old, so you weren't actually there, but just wondering if we could start off a little bit with your recollections of the march as it happened.
Well, surely, and as I reflect on it, I was actually 14.
Oh, okay.
But yes, indeed, I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio. At the time, the whole spirit of the civil rights movement and the spirit of Dr. King's activism was very much a part of the city and of my life as well. Cincinnati is a city that is in the north but had many of the challenges of a southern city. It had segregation of various sorts, and there were major battles going on over public accommodations and access to recreational facilities, matters of that sort. I do recall that in 1961, held at my church, Zion Baptist Church in Cincinnati, was the organizational meeting of a group that would be called the Progressive National Baptist Convention. That was an organization that was founded as a body to address the concerns of ministers such as Dr. King and other African-American preachers who felt that within the National Baptist Convention there had not been adequate receptivity to their message of social activism. A call went out issued by my pastor in Cincinnati for the founding of an organization. Dr. King was very much a component of that, and the organizational meeting was held in November of 1961. In time, Dr. King would make a presence at our church as well. Dr. King directly in that sense was very much a component of the feelings that I was developing around this question. But the overall ferment of the time was such that it was inescapable that one could not begin to engage what was happening across the broader country and within the city in which I lived.
Sure. When you look at this past weekend's coverage of events in Washington, for example, we've got CNN and big media organizations now. So coverage of, I was going to ask you a little bit about news coverage, how it's changed over the past 50 years, and the coverage of the March of 1963 compared with maybe what we saw over the weekend and what we'll hear and see this week.
Yes. Well, it has often been observed that 1963 was a breakthrough year in terms of media coverage of many things in the United States and surely of the modern civil rights movement. Going back to April of 1963, we found ourselves on the civil rights spectrum in Birmingham. And quite often the images of Birmingham, the guard dogs, the hoses, etc., beamed into homes in that 6:30 to 7 o'clock hour of the evening news is often credited with having created for the greater United States a consciousness that this is a problem that we as a nation have to grapple with in a much more aggressive and robust way than we traditionally had.
Right.
And then, of course, we do have the iconic pictures that we all see of the 1963 March on Washington, Dr. King, the Lincoln Monument,
yeah,
the wading pool, etc. So that coverage was very important. But again, we were in a pre-cable network news era, and the coverage that as such that one would get would be from those half-hour clips in the evening, Time, Newsweek, etc. magazines. A far different circumstance from today. Of course, it all depends upon the particular news outlets that one is observing.
True.
There are times when major events of a civil rights nature can be occurring. Some stations will be covering them exclusively, and other stations will be giving them very scant attention. But that's the essence of media, not in a negative way, but there are always orientations that outlets will have, and that's what we see. But there is significantly more news for us to draw upon. There's no reason for anyone in the United States to be without a sense of being informed about issues today.
All right. A lot of time, obviously, has passed since the March in 1963. How would you describe the amount of progress that's been made toward equality in the context of those 50 years?
Considerable progress, Bob. Considerable, almost unbelievable progress. But in order to place that progress into perspective, what I would want to have us understand is what that period of time, 1963, represented. It really was a watershed period, and we often speak of watershed periods in terms of moments in history when there will be a great leap forward. And we were at that point in 1963. Now, some may say, did not we make that great leap forward with the ending of the Civil War? And to understand where we were in 63, we have to cast it all against the backdrop of our history. We began our history as a nation that had great hope, but that had invested in a dynamic of independence, equality, etc., and held out as the antithesis of that which we were, issues of oppression and denial of freedom. Well, of course, we know that even though that was the overall orientation of our nation and is much of the narrative of our country, that we imported much of that into our very founding. So it took a civil war to expel from that part of that, which was slavery. But what we did not expel were a couple of things that slavery had really brought us. One of those things was a notion of black inferiority and white supremacy. Right. We didn't expel that. Nor did we expel the structural disparities that all of that era had given us. So we end the Civil War with those disparities intact, with the mindset of superiority still intact, and we go for another 100 years. And that brings us from 63 up to 1963. And that is why Dr. King, in his speech that we often don't read for its entirety, that is why Dr. King begins it by saying that 50 years ago, a great American in whose shadow we now stand issued a proclamation. But he says, 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. And that is what 63 represented, an effort finally to break through that lack of freedom that had theoretically been given and to call for a more practical implementation of it. That is what the modern civil rights movement has demonstrated. And that is what Dr. King's movement, the greater movement for social justice of the era, was able to accomplish through the Civil Rights Acts of 64, the Voting Rights Acts, Housing Acts, etc. And that is what we have seen in the last 50 years, the implementation of that final embrace of practical equality for all African for all Americans. And then we can go on maybe to talk about a bit more specifically, but we have seen considerable progress since then. If one considers that even coming to the March on Washington, segregation was a outright in one's face component of travel for many people.
Sure.
We are significantly beyond that. We now have embraced school desegregation, even if we have not achieved the goal of equal educational opportunities in all. We have at least eliminated the possibility that housing discrimination as a matter of law could continue. We have not achieved an end to that as a matter of fact. We have put aside the idea that persons can be denied the right to vote on account of their race. We have theoretically embraced that and practically have done that, but we have, as we can perhaps talk about, not really made the major breakthrough. Employment discrimination can no longer be permissible. So we have made major strides. We have seen a transformation in the politics of many of our cities, most of our cities. We have seen persons move into positions of power, move into avenues that would not have been conceivable in 1963. And of course, we have elected an African-American president. So the progress has been considerable.
right. Is Dr. King's message relevant to young people today? I mean, and I ask because it seems like the major civil rights voices are folks who I guess we'd consider to be sort of contemporaries of Dr. King, like the Reverend Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Al Sharpton, kind of older guys, if you will.
Let me answer that in two ways. Absolutely, okay. The message is relevant, and it's relevant for this reason. Despite the progress that has been made, we have considerable work to do. We have helped to dispel in many ways that aura of inferiority and superiority that had enslaved us as a nation for so long. We've begun to make considerable strides in eviscerating that idea, but it is not gone altogether. We have significant structural disparity that we are now being able to see in a way that we could not have before. In other words, having made it illegal to do a variety of things, we now have gotten through that veil only to realize that there is disparity within our economic, social, and educational structures that we must now engage. That is the overall challenge of the day. And if we ask, is Dr. King's message relevant? It surely is. Because among other things, Dr. King gave us two things. He gave us a prophetic vision as a preacher and as a social commentator. He gave us a prophetic vision of where America needed to be headed against the backdrop of what it had always claimed that it was. And he was that voice crying in the wilderness, a very important component of not only our religious tradition, but also of our secular tradition that we can see in many ways. He was that voice saying that this is not where we should be. There is a greater vision. So number one, the prophetic vision. Number two, Dr. King was a strategic thinker. He understood that we cannot simply come to the podium and talk platitudes. We have to come to the podium and talk politics and policy. You see, the Voting Rights Act was a policy statement. A Fair Housing Act is a policy statement, as is an Equal Opportunity Act, a policy statement. So at this point, we have a major strategic undertaking to go. We have to understand policy, we have to plan that, and we have to move to the next stage of policy implementation that hopefully will help to dissipate the presence of structural disparity in our country. That's a message that was relevant in 1963. It surely is a message that all young people, all Americans can embrace today.
Folks point to the recent attacks on the Voting Rights Act and the shooting of Trayvon Martin as examples of how we're backtracking rather than moving forward. What are your thoughts, I guess, on the current state of civil rights in America?
Surely. It would have been 1989. Thurgood Marshall spoke in a case of his regret at where our Supreme Court had come on a number of ways. He also expressed concern even earlier that we were backtracking to where we were in 1954. If we were to look at, if Thurgood Marshall were with us today, he would probably see our recent decision on the Voting Rights Act, Shelby County versus Eric Holder, as a decision that was taking us back almost to pre-Voting Rights Act days. We have backtracked on that. And if we do not correct the structural flaws that decision gave us, and I think Eric Holder has now moved to do that, basically we are now needing to prosecute cases that previously under the Voting Rights Act would likely not have arisen because of a pre-clearance provision that the Department of Justice could have utilized to say, no, you can't go down this route because of the likelihood of racial disparity that can come. But we can do these things. We can summon forth what we need as a nation to do that, particularly in the political arena and in other arenas as well.
Okay. I would imagine that similar to the 1963 march, that this week's events in Washington are kind of a call to action. How do we keep that excitement and the hope of the march alive after it's over?
By considering the depth of our problems and the realities that face us every day. if real life is not a sobering enough circumstance, then we are in trouble. When we look at our cities and we realize that in too many of our cities, the numbers of our youth or the percentages of our youth who are graduating from high school are deathly unacceptable. If we realize that crime in our communities is far beyond what it ever should be, that the numbers of African-American youth, if we only focus there, who are dying as a result of the turmoil of our cities, we know that there is a problem. When we look at the depth of unemployment and the lack of progress made as a group, that is a sobering reality check that says whatever was needed in 1963 surely is needed now and in equal measure, and there is no excuse at this point. President Obama gave a very significant address at Morehouse College, if we're talking to African Americans, and he is saying that now there is no excuse. And that is that it becomes incumbent upon the African American community, upon women, upon Hispanics, upon all groups who have historically been marginalized, to step to the plate of the freedom that is now there. It becomes incumbent upon the greater nation to embrace the vision of our ability to be a beacon, a light on the hill. We can do that. We haven't yet done that. So that is a marching order for us now. And I think that is what the 2013 reiteration of the 1963 March on Washington can be for us.
What can the average person do, I guess, to promote equality?
Number one, vote. Our voting is paltry as a nation. It is clearly unacceptable, and it belies the emphasis that many of us have historically placed upon significance of the franchise. Mm-hmm. We must vote. We must vote as informed voters who are willing to put ideologies aside and willing to make empirical statements about where we need to be as a nation through the votes that we cast. So we must be informed as voters. We must elect wisely. We must put, that is, we must elect persons who will represent in a way that is needed in this country, who will bring the vision, the intellect, the wherewithal that is needed. We must offer ourselves for public service. We must be knowledgeable about our history. We too often still embrace a narrative of American history that is very satisfying to us, but that does not bring us the realities of the warts and all approach. Now, this is not to beat up on ourselves. It's simply to say that if we do not understand where we stand, that we cannot move forward to cure that which is necessary for us to be a 21st century leader nation. So the biggest thing is involvement, openness, education, and an understanding that America is a civic culture that requires all hands on deck.
Excellent. Martin Luther King III said this past weekend that he believes his father's dream will be realized in his daughter's, Dr. King's granddaughter's, lifetime. Do you share his optimism?
Well, I surely share the optimism. And I think I do understand what he is meaning by that. Of course, the reality is that the price of democracy and freedom is always eternal vigilance. And so we will take our pulse in a half century. We'll take our pulse in a century. There will still be the need for vigilance. We will never have come to a point of perfection, much like a corporation. There's always a need for continuous improvement. Systems will often make us inattentive to things. So, yes, my view is that we probably within a generation can begin to ameliorate many of the problems that we now have. But this is a long journey, and we have labored under structural disparities and a mindset of racial inferiority or superiority for a long time. And it will take some time, some generations likely, to get out beyond it. But the biggest thing is that with each generation, we are able to say that we have taken the baton and made a worthy race of it.
All right, Dr. Woods, are we leaving anything important out that we should add? I mean, we could go on and on talking about the subject, obviously, but anything glaring that we should continue with?
Bob, there are no glaring things other than the reality that as a body of individuals, the quality of society that we have rests solely upon the degree of the effort that we are willing to invest in it. We can, none of us can be persons who simply take a seat in the stands and wait for others to move the society forward. If we all roll up our sleeves, if we all say that I have a place on the field of action, if we all take that stewardship of our legacy seriously, we can continue to move forward. It's true now, and it always will be.
All right. Dr. Woods, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate it very much.
Dr. Ronald Woods is an Eastern Michigan University professor. He was the first head of EMU's Department of African American Studies. And we've been talking about the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights March on Washington, where we've come since then, and where we have yet to go.